Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
Does anybody really care as a legend in your own mind?
Howard Simon.
Did you lie to Robbie Butler and tell him that I wear non-prescription glasses to seem smart?
Jeremy White.
It's nothing personal, all right? I just happen to hate your stupid face. It's not just that you became the biggest broadcaster in America. Actually, yes, it is. That's it.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We've been talking football this morning. Got some more stuff to get to, including Mike Shope's article, which you can read right now at WGR550.com.
I'm reading Joe DiBiase's article at our website about the Bills' defense and the Madden ratings. And it could be kind of fun for Bills players. Like, I'm looking at Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer here, right? Bills' two starting safeties.
Yep.
So, you know, you could quibble about your overall rating if you wanted to. Micah Hyde's an 86, Jordan Poyer's an 80. Awareness. Hyde's a 90 and Poyer's a 79.
Oh, my.
If I were Jordan Poyer, I'd spend the next 3 weeks challenging his awareness on things.
Yeah.
You know, you walk in, you leave a house plant right on the interior of the entrance to the gym, and you get in that morning and you're like, Micah, what'd you think of that house plant? What house plant? Oh! Mr. 90 Awareness should have picked up on that.
Do you ask him, like, what color pants you were wearing the day before?
Yes!
My wife is big on awareness.
You know,
I don't know. She thinks I don't notice, like, obvious stuff.
Yeah, you know, Micah, that awareness, I gotta wonder about that. Then there's speed.
When you drop down from 90 every day?
There's speed. It's an 88 versus an 87. Micah's
okay,
an 88.
That's not bad.
Jordan's an 87.
Yeah.
Acceleration, Poyer's higher. So if we see them race, what does that mean? That Micah gets to a higher speed, but Jordan gets there faster?
Who's got the acceleration?
Jordan.
Would that mean, that's not necessarily pull-away speed? Like they would be close,
but
then...
It means you get to your higher speed faster.
Okay.
But that Hyde has a higher speed. There's agility. There's strength.
So the longer the race goes, Hyde catches him and passes him. No?
I don't know about that. It just means he's faster.
Like I go from 0 to 45 driving my car in 4 seconds. You get there, but you drive 50, you'll eventually pass me? I don't know.
If we're doing real algebra and all that, so it depends how far away the finish line is to determine who wins the race.
Right, so that's what I was wondering. Length of race.
It just means Hyde is faster at top speed.
Okay.
I'd have some fun with this. Let's see. Trey White, Taron Johnson, E.J. Gain, just looking
awareness.
Through some of their defense. Oh, man, Lorenzo Alexander's awareness, a 93.
You know what? It's funny.
Lorenzo, what he's got to do the rest of training camp or all of preseason and training camp is just every time he notices something, this is what I would do. Like if we got ratings around the building, like, oh, you guys didn't notice that. That's how you get a 93. That's how you get a 93.
You don't think that would get on your teammates' nerves at some point?
Oh, I know it would.
You know what's funny? I said I could care less about Madden ratings, but I feel like if I'm Jordan Poyer, I'd be angry. Like that seems like safeties have to be aware of a lot of stuff. I guess, like, what's Tremaine Edmonds, right? Wouldn't you think, like, middle linebacker's awareness, which should be pretty important. I feel like if I'm Jordan Poyer, that would actually anger me. Like, you're telling me I'm not aware of what's going on the football field. That would bother me, actually. I guess he'll find a way
to survive. Just means you're not as aware as others.
Head on a swivel, baby. Tremaine Edmonds, hopefully he's got a good awareness ranking.
If you missed that, I did tweet out an article about, or a video breakdown from Brian Baldinger on Tremaine Edmonds and the role he plays in the middle of the Bills' defense, how his size, his length, his height, that he really creates a problem for opposing quarterbacks, which, of course, you would have thought coming in. But Brian Baldinger on Twitter put out a little video breakdown of that. It's some pretty cool stuff, so if you get a chance, check it out.
I mentioned one of the things that we were talking about earlier, the Adam Rank article at NFL.com, State of the Bills, State of the Franchise, and he's got a whole breakdown on the Bills, and he says his 2019 breakout star is Tremaine Edmonds at linebacker. And I don't think that's a big stretch because he showed some real good ability in his rookie year. And now you think he's got a year under his belt. I mean, there were times early in last season for sure. You can see the athleticism. You can see the skill and all that stuff. But there were times when he would just misdiagnose a play or maybe be a little too over-aggressive and be out of position. And I thought, you know, as the year went on, he certainly got better at that, became more comfortable. I would think we'll be more comfortable stepping into a leadership role this year. You know, they talked last year about how, late in the season, Kyle Williams, I think, let Tremaine like run a film session or some kind of meeting at some point, a defensive meeting. Lorenzo Alexander's been really good in terms of helping Tremaine Edmonds move up to the point where he's got to be the leader on that defense. So I think I'm excited to see, as much as we talk about Josh Allen, I'm really excited to see what Tremaine Edmonds with Matt Milano can do as part of that linebacking core. It's not a stretch to say that Edmonds is the breakout star of 2019. He's that talented. And he's still young. You know, he only just turned 20 years old.
They have a number of pretty good players on their defense that I almost end up referring myself, I'm like telling myself here, a few of them as the forgotten man. I always forget about Tremaine Edmonds. Not that I forget about him, but then it'll be, oh, yeah, he's entering year two, and he had a pretty good year one if he takes a step forward.
Right.
And then I think, oh, but now I forgot about Matt Milano.
Milano had a great year.
He's
last
the forgotten man.
Yeah.
And then you go over to Lorenzo Alexander, like, oh, don't forget about Lorenzo Alexander. Oh, and there's a rookie on the line in Ed Oliver. But Jordan Phillips is a pretty good. So, you know, like, there's a bunch of.
I don't think Poyer gets enough credit.
No, I think the defense has a number of very good players, has really good depth, and it is, if there's one thing. Maybe this is true last year, too. You went into last year thinking the defense is going to be good, and it was. You go into this year thinking, I'm not even sure it's going to be better or that it has to be. Mm-hmm. It might be the same defense against a little bit easier schedule. You know, like they're not playing the Chargers. They're not playing who'd they play last year that really put up some points on them.
It's funny. That is an interesting point. In that piece, I think it was that NFL.com piece, points out the Bills in terms of yards, certain statistical rankings. Their defense was very good, maybe third in the league in terms of total yards against, but they were 18th in points allowed because when they lost, they gave up. There were some blowout losses.
Let's try to explain that a few ways.
Opening day. Chargers put up 30-something, I think.
Bears. Right.
When you're completely away from them.
You had quarterbacks were giving games away.
Right. And it snowballed.
Derek Anderson didn't throw a single touchdown pass?
Don't think so. They were in a stretch there where I believe they went through a few weeks with nothing.
Yeah. So if
three
you have,
games in a row, maybe without a touchdown pass?
Yeah. If you have an offense that can never extend drives, can never put points on the board, you know, games just get away from you.
Yeah.
So it's not to say that it didn't happen, but you know, there's some factors that can go into that.
But I think if the defense is last year's defense and the offense gets better, that should put the Bills in playoff contention. I know Mike's got the article up about 8-8. What's good? Is 8-8 good? Is it bad? And there's somewhat of a, how do they get to 8-8, which he points out in the article. Look, if the defense plays at last year's level and the offense improves to, can you get to top 20? You know, if not middle of the pack, this team should be in contention for a wild card playoff spot. If they're middle of the pack offense and top 10 defense, they should be in the playoffs, I think, in the AFC. Handful of teams to talk about, but I think the Bills can be in the playoffs if they get that kind of performance from the defense coupled with an offense that improves. And again, you know, some semblance of a running game to help out the quarterback, and we've been talking about Josh Allen all morning. Can you get me to 20 touchdown passes with him? It's not a big ask. I really don't think it's a big ask to say, hey, 16 starts, 20 touchdown passes in year two, when adding Cole Beasley, John Brown, and Frank Gore and Singletary and all this stuff and Yeldon and whatever the heck you get out of the tight end position. Tight end position is the biggest unknown, I think.
Well, one thing about this year is it might be a little bit of a fight or an argument about this. Sid tweeted me a couple stats on the Bills. He wrote that on the passing game, on Allen and all this, there's the what's okay for Allen versus what do you want from Allen and all that, and the Bills' passing game as a whole. So Sid wrote to me, the Bills have only had a quarterback pass for 20 touchdowns plus in the last 28 seasons. Okay? 28 seasons.
Yeah.
How many times has the Bills quarterback had 20 or more touchdowns?
Oh, Tyrod got to 21 year, didn't he? Didn't Tyrod get to 21 year?
I mean, this is a trivia question.
Fitz would have done it, I think. So how many times in the last 28 years?
28 years. How many Bills quarterbacks?
Bledsoe would have done it. Well, I'm going to say
20 touchdowns.
three quarterbacks.
By the way, Lossman got the 19. So that one didn't
did he really get the 19?
Okay. He did in his rookie year.
Bledsoe.
Or not his rookie. His first Taylor. Full year as a starter.
Nobody. I'm going to say three. Oh, Kelly's in there. Wait, we're going back 28 years.
Yeah.
So four.
How many seasons, not how many people?
Oh, I don't know.
10.
The answer I was going to say six.
The answer is 10.
Kelly's in there, right? Bledsoe would have done it.
10 times.
28.
In 28 years.
Yeah, it's not a lot. I know.
Fitz did it three times. Bledsoe did it. The reason he picked 28 seasons, he says, is the year before Kelly set the franchise record with 33.
And I was going to say that's one or two, whatever. Go ahead.
Just looking at it, though, like the number of times the Bills have been sub 3,000 in that time. It's a point I make a lot. I'm going to continue making it this year that there's the Bills passing standard and then there's the actual passing standard. You know, Chris Trapasso tweeted at me, 19 touchdowns, 12 picks would be a good second year for Allen, to which I don't necessarily disagree because he did a whole stat line with eight rushing touchdowns. If Allen has 27 total touchdowns, my guess is we'll all say, pretty good. And the team should definitely be in the mix if he has 27 total touchdowns.
Yes, I would think if they're not in the playoffs, they're certainly right there alive, I think, into the final week of the season.
And if that season were to play out and that season were to end that way, 19 passing touchdowns, 8 rushing touchdowns, you know what I'd say at the end of that year? Not enough.
Yeah.
Like, good step,
but
not enough. The Bills' standard is very low when it comes to passing the football. So I want him not only to be one of the better Bills passers of the last 28 years, but I want him to grow into one of the best NFL passers of the last maybe about 28 years. What? That's asking a lot. I'm not saying he has to be a Hall of Famer or he's a bust. Just that here's how I'll say it. Hopefully he makes us forget about the Bills' terrible passing standard. How's that? Right? Get to a place where
we change the standard here.
Yes. Where we no longer talk about, wow, this team hasn't had a 4,000-yard passer since 2002.
Yeah.
Because he just gets there in 2020 and then again in 2022 and 2023, but has a couple years where he doesn't reach that That's what I'm looking for.
Like, we've been talking, I know the number for me, for whatever reason, the number 24 sticks in my head because I think it's a touchdown and a half passes a game on the average. That's, again, I don't think that's a lot. 16 games, 1.5 touchdowns a game passing, that's 24. Again, look at the Bills' stats. 25 or more touchdown passes. It's not a lot to ask for. It hasn't happened here since 1991.
Jim Kelly.
25 or more. That's not a huge number. I'm not saying 50
number.
From Mahomes.
How many guys threw for 25 last year?
Hang on a second. I've got that here. I'll get that for a second. But like I said, think about where the Bills have been, right? That's a stat that is just almost unfathomable to me. That you can't in this day and age, in the passing league, no one in 28 years has 25 more touchdown passes. It's not supposed to be that difficult. Last year in the league, 25 or more, you're talking 13 guys. Trubisky. That's where we always get to Mitchell Trubisky. He had 24 last year. So just ahead of him was Aaron Rodgers with 25 touchdown passes. He was one of 13 quarterbacks to have 25 or more last year. And to me, that's why I got to 24. Middle of the pack. 24 TD passes last year is middle of the pack. It's 1.5 per game. If you make 16 starts with what we think is a better offensive line, the same offensive play caller back, a deeper set of running backs, it should not be a lot to ask for in year two from Josh Allen.
So what is it, 25 touchdowns? How many years since the Bills had 25?
1991.
Okay, 1991. There have been 1991. Since 1991, how many seasons of 26 touchdown passes or more have there been in the NFL's history?
Couldn't even begin to
250.
Wow.
I can't even do it because the tiebreaker. I'm down at 220 where I've got guys like Jim Everett. Joe Ferguson did it, 26 in 1983.
But that's why the standard here was, that's why when you get texts to people about the Allen hate, when you're like, 20 touchdowns, what are you... It's not a big number. It really isn't. It feels like it's big around here because the passing offense has been substandard you know, for most of the last 15 years, for most of post-Bledsoe, with a couple of exceptions. 803-0550 to join us.
That's what I want to find is, I was trying to go to NFL ProFootballReference.com and pull this out, which would be the number of 25 touchdown seasons since the Bills' last one.
Since 91?
It's probably 200.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the number of teams that haven't had a 25 touchdown pass season or passer, how about that? The number of teams in the league that have not had a quarterback throw four.
You want to try a couple?
At least 25 touchdown passes since 1991.
Want to try a couple on? My first guess would be, I've got a first guess right out of the gate.
Oh, you do, huh? Okay, yep. I've got a good guess. Go ahead.
I would guess the Jets.
That's actually was my guess. All right, so let me come up with another one. Actually, let me think about it. We're going to get to our guest here on the West Tour hotline, but let me.
Ooh, would the Dolphins be a good guess
that's
too?
That's where we're going. no, because Marino would have done it since 91, right? Yeah, I got to think about that one. Number of teams without a 25 touchdown passer season. Would the Bears be on that list? I mean, they didn't have great quarterbacks.
Here's a text. No one wants Andy Dalton. He averages 25 touchdowns per season. 20 is not enough from Dave. That's a good part of this point. 25 isn't even a big standard.
No.
And for us to get there,
I'm just
it really is.
24, you know?
Moving out of the basement. It's time to move out of the basement. Yeah.
803-0550 to join us. We are doing some training camp previews, going down the list of Bills' opponents, getting you ready for camps, which will, well, Denver's opens up today. Everybody else is coming in next week. So let's go to the West Star Hotline. Chris Whittingham joining us, pregame and halftime host, WQAM Radio in Miami, right now on our West Star Hotline. Chris, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and I just did a search on Football Reference, and Ryan Tannehill had a 27 touchdown.
Oh, he did
5 years ago.
Okay,
so he would qualify.
All right, so yeah, so scratch Miami off the list. Now we still have to do the rest of the league for research.
At that time, what did Dolphins fan? What did they think of him? This is the guy, or this was a positive step?
It was probably his. I would say that season and his first under Adam Gase. Where there was a feeling that he would eventually get to a point under the right coaching that he could take that next step as the franchise quarterback. It's actually probably been the sorest subject with Dolphins football for 7 years now. This is the first in the post-Tannehill era that this will be the year for Ryan Tannehill. And frankly, I'm afraid for Bills fans that they'll end up doing the same thing with Josh Allen, where every year will be the year that he makes the big leap. And it just never happened for him. He's 30 years old, and we were still trying to have this argument. But at that time, there was definitely a feeling amongst a majority of the fan base, I would say, that Ryan Tannehill would eventually be that.
Well, the good news is we have experience at it. So, you know, I don't know if he'd last till 30, quite honestly, but we went through that with J.P. Lossman and E.J. Manuel and Trent Edwards and Tyrod Taylor and every other quarterback around here. So it's not like we haven't done this before. I guess one of the things I wanted to bring up for sure is, what's it like in South Florida this year with expectations? I mean, the Dolphins, Chris, as you know, have kind of been like one of those in-between teams, right? They've never been really horrendous. They've never been really good. They've 6-7-8, maybe they had 9-7 season, just kind of in there. Now, most people are looking at Miami as the team that, if not the worst, will be one of the worst teams in the league this year. They're resetting, new coach, new quarterback, all this other stuff. What are people thinking about going into the football season down there?
Yeah, you make an interesting point about the Dolphins never really being that bad. They had one 4-12 season when Dave Wannstedt got fired, and they had a 1-15 in 2007. But they happened to be in years that there weren't really top quarterbacks available. That really is the unfortunate part of the Dolphins' misfortune over the course of the last 15 years, is that they've never really been in position to take the obvious quarterback. Matt Ryan was probably the most obvious one that was there for them, and instead they took the left tackle in Jake Long. But I think that really is the biggest concern with the Dolphins fan base heading into the year is the quarterback position. I'm sure in Buffalo it's been the same for 25 years as well. It's finding that next guy that is franchise changing, because ultimately they've tried a bunch of different guys in the first round and the second round and free agency and trades. They've done everything, the Dolphins, but they've never found that changing guy. And when you look at the draft this year and see Tua and you see Justin Herbert, that really might even be the bigger focus of the year than anyone currently on the Dolphins roster. I think fans are definitely prepared for there not to be a great deal of winning. You see a lack of depth and talent across a majority of the roster. The quarterback position might be the worst in the NFL, with Ryan Fitzpatrick right now favored to start, and Josh Rosen Really, there's hope that he could take over, but from his first year in Arizona, there's not a great deal of evidence that he's going to be a top-level quarterback. And so you're watching Josh Rosen to see if maybe he can become he can deliver on some of the promise that he had as the 10th overall pick a year ago and was traded after 1 year because Arizona wanted to go with Kyler Murray. But it all comes down to the quarterback position, as it always does. And for the Dolphins, there's real thought with the poor season that they might be embarking on that they could end up solving it for 15 years with one of these quarterbacks that's in college right now.
Yeah, what is the plan or what is the thought process down there? Because yeah, as an outsider, you would look at it, and I'll look at it and say, okay, well, the Dolphins are throwing the season away. They're thinking about the quarterback in the 2020 draft. Why would you play Fitz? Just go play Josh Rosen, see if somehow maybe he turns out to be somebody worth using.
Agreed, and that's my position as well. I think that you have to start Josh Rosen from the beginning and find out. Although I guess if Ryan Fitzpatrick ends up starting, it is your answer, isn't it? Because if Josh Rosen is ultimately the quarterback that you believe him to be from a promise standpoint, then he would win the job, that he would deliver in this training camp and not have to wait five starts to supersede Ryan Fitzpatrick. If Josh Rosen really is this good, he is going to start from day one. So I guess that answer is self-evident, even if Ryan Fitzpatrick ends up starting from the beginning. The reason why I say Ryan Fitzpatrick could be likely to start is because so far what we've seen in the mini camps is that Ryan Fitzpatrick has been the better quarterback and the better player. And so Josh Rosen comes into this training camp playing as the second string quarterback and having to earn that starting position. The other thing too is that with the change in coaching staff, with Brian Flores coming over and taking over from the New England Patriots, I don't think he's ever going to be in a position where he's going to say, I'm going to start the worst player because it's better for the overall health of the team. I think he's someone that's almost the height of meritocratic in trying to make this team. You earn the positions that you are given. And so I think if Josh Rosen is the second-best quarterback in training camp, he will not start. But again, I don't think that's necessarily a problem, because if he's the second-best quarterback in training camp behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, then he's probably not going to be any good anyway.
Well, I'd wanted to tie in a coaching question. So since you brought up Ryan Flores, do people look at this as, hey, let's, he comes off the Patriots staff, maybe we find a really good coach? Or as an outsider, Chris, I would tend to look at it and say, well, this guy's really not in a good spot. I mean, how much are they going to lose the next couple of years? Does he even survive, stick around long enough, or is this guy basically a sacrificial lamb coach?
Yeah, and that's sort of where I feel for him. He did sign the longest contract of any of the coaches that were signed in this cycle. He signed a 5-year contract, and that's probably the guarantee you have to have because, I mean, we've seen it in Cleveland when, Sashi Brown and Paul DeBodesta take over. They're given the task of, maybe you could go ahead and lose some games for a while, but the moment you win zero, you're going to be out. I mean, you see it in basketball with Sam Hinkie takes over the Philadelphia 76ers with the charge of tanking and finding some players at the top of the draft, and he gets fired before he can see it through under pressure from the league. And so all these teams that have embarked on, well, we're okay with losing as long as we find the franchise-changing players that we're looking for, generally those coaches and GMs don't get to see that through. So I fear for Chris Greer, the general manager, and Brian Flores, the coach. And frankly, in terms of how we think of him going into the season, he's a bit of an unknown, because while he does come from that Belichick system, that, as you would well know, does not always mean that you're going to have success. Oh, it actually almost never means that you're going to have success if you're an assistant coming from Bill Belichick, because let's be honest, there's only one Bill Belichick. And so while there are certainly positive signs with the staff that he put together and the things that he's done since taking over, there is a bit of a fear from my perspective that he does some, Belichickian type things without really the resume to back it up. And you wonder if players respond to that without it coming from Belichick. And ultimately, if you can get a second-rate version of what is the best thing within the same division as Belichick, if you're ultimately going to be competing at the highest level.
Chris, last thing with Miami again, nobody's expecting a very good record this year. Where are the strengths? Is there anything, as we look at Miami as an opponent the Bills are going to play twice a year, where would you worry about anything with the Dolphins? Will they be good at anything in particular?
Well, the area where they're the strongest, in my opinion, is in the secondary. When you look at Xavien Howard, who was a Pro Bowl corner a year ago, and someone who really broke out, had a ton of interceptions, but not a ton of interceptions. Sometimes that means you're being thrown at a lot. That was not the case for Xavien Howard. He just, every time the ball was thrown in his direction, he made big plays. He made plays that won the Dolphins games a year ago. They beat Oakland at home almost entirely because he got an interception off of Derek Carr on a final drive that Oakland was almost certainly going to score in. So Xavien Howard there, your two safeties could end up being, depending on how Brian Flores deploys his secondary players, Minkah Fitzpatrick, their first-round pick from a year ago, who was really solid as a rookie, and Rashad Jones, who also has a Pro Bowl pedigree. So while the Dolphins aren't strong in a lot of places, I would definitely say the secondary is one of them. They probably do need another corner to emerge at some point. They've had a couple of picks that have floundered in the secondary. But on the whole, their Pro Bowl pedigree for me is going to be in the secondary. If Rashad Jones is healthy and, frankly, stays on the team, there's some thought he might have been traded during the minicamp. But if he stays on the team and he's healthy and Xavien Howard is healthy and Minkah Fitzpatrick stays healthy, that for me is by far the strong area of the team. You could also look at a running back. Kenyon Drake has some evidence of showing well at very moments. But for me, it's almost certainly the secondary where the Dolphins will have some strength this year.
All right. Chris, thanks for coming on with us. Good luck with the football season.
Thank you, sir.
Chris Whittingham, he is the pregame host and halftime host on WQAM Radio in Miami with the lowdown on the Miami Dolphins. 803-0550 to join us, 888-552-550. We're talking about Josh Allen, stat line, expectations for year two, what numbers you have in mind, all that fun stuff as we get ready for Bills training camp to open next week. Also, we'll do a little hockey when we get back. So we're still waiting for the next trade from Jason Bottrell. We're still waiting for, right, at least one move involving defensemen coming up from the Sabres GM. Will it be Rasmus Ristolainen? There have been some rumors that, you know, maybe Winnipeg would be a possible destination should the Sabres be willing to trade him. Nikolaj Ehlers' name has been out there, floated in the rumor mill. We'll talk a little bit about that when we get back. Jeff Hamilton covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. We'll find out what's going on in Winnipeg, maybe get some Sabres juicy rumors started coming up in a moment. Don't forget, Brews on the Water is back for another year at Gratwick Park, right on the river in North Tonawanda. We've got tickets available right now at WGR550.com. We will have, a whole bunch of beer for you. Breweries from all over the country will be in town, and you can sample their beers. Fatheads Brewery, 5 and 20 Brewing, Founders Brewing Company, among those on hand for the event on Saturday, July 27th. There'll be live music going on that day. There'll be vendors for some shopping experience for you. And again, great location right on the water in North Tonawanda. It is Saturday, July 27th. We have tickets at WGRF550.com. There are general admission tickets available. There are also VIP tickets available and whatever other information you might be looking for the event. Again, all available right now at WGRF550.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ristolainen, I mean, he's probably the most marketable piece to really bring in a significant player, particularly a significant forward. If they have something like that going, I don't think that it had to happen July 1st. If we get into August and as you start looking at training camp, and if it hasn't happened, well, then I would get worried. I don't want to say, oh, you have to do it on July 1st, because, I mean, a bunch of teams are already worrying about signing free agents. I think kind of over the next few days, even into next week, is still a reasonable time to expect trades to happen.
That is Scott Cullen from NHL.com. We're going to talk more hockey in a moment. Just a quick run through. I didn't double check my work. Great news, as far as I can tell. The Bills are the only team in the NFL that have not had a quarterback throw for at least 25 touchdown passes in a single season since 1991. Everybody else has done it at least once.
Since
Jim Kelly, no one's done it. And the Bills, as far as I can tell, like the Jets had Fitz. Had the 31 touchdowns a few years ago.
So even a guy that was here and didn't do it here.
Did it elsewhere.
Did it somewhere else.
And the Dolphins had Tannehill. And I thought maybe the Bears. But Jay Cutler did it in Chicago. So as far as I can tell, every other team in the league has had at least one quarterback throw for at least 25 touchdown passes since 1991, since Jim Kelly was here.
Hmm.
Yay for us. 803-0550 to join us this morning. Let's go to the Western Hotline. We're waiting for another trade from the Sabres. Maybe it's Rasmus Ristolainen. So where would he go if they're trading him? We're looking at teams that might need defensemen, and that brought us to the Winnipeg Jets. A couple reasons why I wanted to talk to Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Ristolainen trade, Nikolai Ehlers, stuff that's floating around out there on the rumor mill. Jeff is with us right now. It's Howard and Jeremy here in Buffalo. Jeff, welcome to the show, first of all.
Gentlemen, what a pleasure. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on in your off-season. Rasmus Ristolainen, first off, let's start there specifically. What are you hearing? Anything connected with the Sabres, with Ristolainen, from Winnipeg's standpoint back there?
Well, first off, I don't know if there is an off-season, especially with what's been going on last year. But, yeah, I mean, it's been all rumors. I mean, if there's anything that the Jets are really, really, really good at, it's dousing those flames and trying to put those out as they try to work behind the scenes. It's been an interesting off-season for Winnipeg. Certainly, Ristolainen's been a guy that's been rumored in this neck of the woods. There's been Jake Gardner's also been a guy from that the Winnipeg Jets have been interested in and have kind of pushed the buttons on, and they're really looking for guys that fit into that range, that Tyler Myers range, if you will. For what they had before, just for some cost certainty. And a guy like Ristolainen, obviously making, the $5.4 million a season, he's the kind of guy that would certainly fit on that group. And, I do like the two teams. I think there's certainly some interest there as far as what the pieces the Winnipeg could give back. And certainly if you can get some kind of stabilization on that right side, a position that was a big, 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 big strength of the Winnipeg Jets, but went over a major overhaul with the loss of Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers, I think you're going to try to at least have that conversation.
Yeah, there's definitely a need there, right? I mean, I think if you did a connect the dots thing, from Winnipeg's perspective only, I know you mentioned Jake Gardner, maybe the free agent route, but there's definitely, after Byfuglien, there's what on right side D, right?
Oh, I mean, well, that was the thing. I mean, it got to a point where Tyler Myers was frustrated being on this team because it was just such a crowded right side. I mean, he was competing for ice time with Jacob Trouba, and of course, as you mentioned, Dustin Byfuglien, two pretty premier guys, right defensemen in this league. So now you look at it, and it's quite different. I mean, you have a guy in Neil Pionk, you got back in the Jacob Trouba trade. He still needs a contract, He's a little bit of an unproven guy, obviously had a bit of some offensive flash, but his defensive deficiencies were also just as glaring. So we'll see. He's not exactly a fill-in spot there. And then you look down the lineup, is Sammy Niku, a guy who won AHL Defenseman of the Year a year ago. He's a guy who certainly you'd think would be able to slot in that position, but I'm not thinking he's a top four D-man just yet. He's a smaller, thin kid. He can move the puck absolutely. He's definitely got a lot of upside. But I don't know if you're ready to give him those kind of minutes. And behind him, it really is thin. I mean, Tucker Poolman is a guy who the Jets really, really liked, got on, was supposed to be his year last year. Unfortunately, he fell into some concussion problems. And then when he got back healthy, it was just injury after injury. Now, he's definitely going to be making a jump this year. But the Winnipeg Jets need to figure that out. I mean, this is a team that hasn't really been defensively strong for the last couple of years, particularly last season, just kind of seemed to fall by the wayside. Obviously, 2 years ago, they were able to make it to the West Final, but it was pretty much on the heels of their offense and not so much their defense. So adding a guy with experience and with some offensive upside, but also kind of an all-around player, would kind of bring the Jets back to where they used to be. Right now, they're certainly trying to, not scrambling at this point, but certainly looking for that spot.
So, Jeff, you mentioned a moment ago trade targets. All right, let's say Bottrell is talking to Winnipeg, and the Sabres definitely need a center to put in on line two. If they don't use Johansson there, they can make a case for a top two-line right winger. So what about potential trade targets from Winnipeg if indeed they're talking Ristolainen?
So if we're going to follow the rumor mill here, I mean, one of the biggest names, of course, is Nikolai Ehlers. Now, I find that to be an interesting conversation only because it fits the Jets' needs. I think that Buffalo, if it was to be a Ristolainen trade, I think Buffalo would have to add something to it. I don't know if the Jets are looking to get rid of a guy who, although, has struggled in the playoffs, everyone knows he hasn't scored a goal in 21 postseason games. That's obviously somewhat of a concern, but this is a guy who, ask the analytics guys, they all love him. He drives play. He's one of the few players in this league who really is that, is really has some great stats moving through the neutral zone. He's got a ton of speed. So it is an interesting conversation with him, but you know, you look at Buffalo's roster, and do they need another left winger? I mean, not really. I mean, they're as log jammed on the left wing, in my opinion, as they are at right D. So, you know, if Nikolaj Ehlers is a piece in that, I think that's something that the Sabres would probably work around or figure out. I mean, anytime you can add a legitimate top six forward, you know, of Nikolaj Ehlers' skill, you know, you want that. But another interesting conversation would be, and you mentioned Howard Centerman, is that, you know, a Jack Roslovic. You know, Jack Roslovic is a guy who hasn't really got his chance here yet. He's got a little bit of opportunity. I shouldn't say that. I mean, he has seen some time on the first power play unit. He's been up there and, you know, in the top six for chunks of seasons, but, you know, it's predominantly been in the bottom six role, and a guy who's kind of waiting to kind of come into his own. He's certainly not going to be the only piece in that conversation. I would add in another guy like Matthew Perreault. You know, Matthew Perreault's a guy who, you know, he isn't coming off his best season, but he again, the numbers guys love him. He can add stability to a second power play unit. I wouldn't be putting him on my first power play unit, but he certainly is a solid bottom six forward, and a guy that the Jets, I believe, would be looking to get rid of just to dump his $4.1 million salary. If you put those two guys together, you know, it might not be the sexy name coming back to the Sabres, but I do think it fits two solid needs, and certainly with the potential of Jack Roslovic not met yet, could be a steal actually for your side.
Jeff, would Ehlers be a possibility to be able to flip to the right wing, or is that not something that would be advised in a situation in this case?
You know what? I think it's possible. It did happen in Winnipeg. It was more of an emergency situation, like an in-game adjustment. If they wanted to add him to a different line or move him up to the first line, because you know Blake Wheeler isn't moving off the right wing on that top line. So it has happened. I don't know if obviously there's the advantages playing your off wing as far as driving into the middle. Coming from your off wing, but those are skills certainly that Nick Ehlers has, and I know that's something that the Jets wanted him to do less of early on in his career, because he's not exactly the biggest guy, and coming up the middle isn't always a great recipe for staying healthy. But the flexibility is there. I don't know if I would lean on that. I don't think Nikolaj Ehlers would like to play his off wing like most players. I think they're most comfortable on their own wing. It's where they played a majority of their career and have had their success. So. Although I think it's an option, I don't know if it'd be the ideal one for a guy like Nick Ehlers.
You mentioned Perreault a moment ago. So what is the cap situation, you know, without knowing what the numbers are at this point for Line A and Connor? Do you think the Jets are in a situation where if they made a trade, it would be, quote-unquote, you've also got to take a contract as part of this deal?
Most likely. But I mean, at the same time, you know, Rasmus Ristolainen isn't a throw-in.
Right.
You know, so that's why I feel like that conversation, those trade talks, aren't exactly going to be, you know, if the Jets had their way, this is what they do. You know, obviously Buffalo's got to get what they want in return. But Matthew Perreault is a guy who, because he's, you know, at this point, the Jets are trying to shed as much as they can. They still have the option to buy out a guy like Dmitry Kulikov, which, I believe they probably will. They don't really need him. I don't even know if he fits into their top nine, to be honest with you. Top six, to be honest with you. I don't even, he wasn't in stretches for last season, even when he was healthy. So, but in that case, in Matthew Perreault's case, that $4 million off the books is just such a huge opportunity for them. You know, I do think they like him. He's not a player they're just throwing away. They certainly wouldn't buy him out. He's a guy who certainly has that, who offers some value to other teams. And the Jets could just, with those contracts still up in the air, it's going to be a very interesting, for many teams, what they sign for Patrick Laine, whether that be a bridge deal or a long-term deal, and ditto for Kyle Connor. There's not going to be a ton of room left over for even signing guys like Pionk, who's been, people have talked as high as $2.9 million a season for him. And of course, Andrew Kopp, a little bit of a lesser known name around the NHL, but kind of coming in just below that. So, you know, you look at with the $22.9 million the Jets have to spend this year, it's really going to get swallowed up soon with especially those two guys.
Hey, final thing on those two guys, with Laine or Connor, does either one, you think either one could drag into the season like a Nylander thing from last year?
I could see both dragging. To be honest with you, I think, you know, with this I don't think it's a Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine issue. I think it's an RFA, high-end RFA issue for all these teams. So, I think everyone just gets this sense that they're waiting for the first shoe to drop. Who's going to sign that first contract? I know Sebastian Aho with the whole, offer sheet kind of, I think some people thought that would level things out. Well, that's kind of yesterday's news, and no one's really focusing on that anymore. And, I could certainly think, especially with in-house, when you look at a guy like Patrick Laine, obviously had a stellar start to his career, scoring 100 goals in the first three seasons, but obviously coming off a disappointing season last year where he only tucked 30-something goals. So, for him, he's not going to want less than Kyle Connor, and Kyle Connor's not going to want it less than him. So Winnipeg particularly finds himself in a situation where they're going to have to kind of massage a couple egos as they work out these deals. But to just, again, to answer your question, I could totally see this getting into the fall and potentially threatening training camp.
All right. Jeff, thanks. Thanks for the information. Thanks for giving us some time this morning. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks. Have me on anytime. Take care.
Jeff Hamilton with the latest from Winnipeg on our West Her Hotline. Hey, before we go to break, Extendo Sports coming up in Skaters Top of the Hour. Don't forget, register for your chance to win a round of golf with Jeremy. This week's Friday Golf Foursome, we're giving away a round of golf at Batavia Country Club. Now, you got to get in and register by noon tomorrow. That is the deadline for this week's contest. You get a round of golf for you and two of your friends with Jeremy at Batavia Country Club. We get you a cart, you get lunch, you get the Michelob Ultra prize pack as well. All you need to do is register for your chance to win. Go to the contest page at WGR550.com. It is the Friday Golf Foursome at Batavia Country Club. Again, the deadline is noon tomorrow. Make sure you register for your chance to win some free golf.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
A quick note for Brayton.
Last minute of play in the show.
He's not a fan of the new robot umpire system they're trying out in the Atlantic League. They had their first ejection last night.
They ejected a robot?
No, not the rope. No. Frank Viola, who I think might be the same guy who pitched with the Twins and the Mets.
Gotta be.
Came out to argue balls and strikes last night. He said the umpire was not doing a good enough job overruling the computer system. He got thrown out of the game last night. So robot ump, TrackMan, I believe is what they call it.
TrackMan.
First TrackMan that, controversy.
That sounds like something out of The Simpsons.
TrackMan.
TrackMan. TrackMan says strike.
Get rid of robot umpiring now.
TrackMan says ball.
TrackMan awards a steal of first base.
You're terrible, by the way, TrackMan.
Speaking of which, the steal of first base was the most anybody.
Oh,
did...
come on! What?
Thank you.
You're not going to crap on it like old
no,
stodgy guy.
I'm not going to crap on it.
Okay.
I'm going to say anybody that was mad about it is mad about the dumbest thing in the world.
That's your,
how many times in a year will it happen?
Boy.
Twice.
It just happened the other day. I
as
think.
It stands, you can swing and miss and run to first base
on a third strike.
Yeah.
Not on a first or second strike.
Sure, whatever.
You can steal first base
on any
pitch.
So we already have a system in place where you can strike out and get on first base. And if you're pretending to be mad about that,
poor Brayton.
I mean, there are so many other things to be mad about.
There's going
to
be blows. We got to get out. Brayton
is
going to
come in and yell at us. Who cares about stealing first in the freaking Atlantic League?
Have a nice day.